tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
To DCPL's Notes from the Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Washington, D.C. My name is Will, your host. Before we begin, we remember the assassination of Dr. King 50 years ago tomorrow on April 4th, 1968. While there are many traumatic and worthwhile clips that we could play from that day, I'd like to play the conclusion of Dr. King's final speech, which he made 50 years ago today.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
The trauma of Dr. King's assassination and the uprising that would follow, of course, led to the naming of the MLK Library in his honor. And over the next year, we will have library programs that remember the events of 1968. Today in the studio, I'm joined by Mel of DCPL and by Sade Makonnen, the library's maker in residence.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, and it's Sade.
Sade. Okay. There we go.
Anyway. Starting off on a good foot.
Yeah, exactly. So today we're talking about the Fab Lab as well as DCPL's maker in residence program. Mel, could you both introduce yourself and the Maker in Residence program?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Mel Wyant. I work in the Fab Lab primarily, but with the labs. And so this Maker in Residence, the Fab Lab, is a creative space through the public library that is what's called a maker space. So for those of you who don't know what a maker space is, it's going to be a space where there's sort of accessibility to all kinds of different new creative technology. So things like 3D printers, laser cutters, scanners for 3D purposes, sewing machines. We have a wire bender. We have some 3D carving machines, all sorts of different cool technology, along with a lot of smaller things, coding focused, etc. So that's what the Fab Lab is. And the Maker in Residence program is a sort of incredible artist in residency, maker in residency program that we do. This is our second year running, and this year we're so lucky for the calendar year of 2018 to have Sade on with us and to really be doing a year of focusing on sort of infusing her artistic style and her passions with maker technology. So the maker in residency program is focused on artists who maybe don't have as much of a maker, quote-unquote, background, coming in and learning how to 3D print, learning how to use our different technologies and equipment in a way that can help them kind of then take that technology and further it in their artistic pursuits and in their with their skills, on top of then also teaching the public some of what they've learned. Yeah, that's kind of a wrap-up of the Maker in Residency program. There will be a gallery showing and sort of a presentation at the end of the year. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what it's been like so far, what the Maker in Residency sort of is like at the time has been?
Sure. So far it's been great. I've been given a lot of time to explore, so which is such a blessing, because that takes time, and we don't have much of that. So I have thus far visited most of the branches that have a lot of the equipment, like with Will and Casey at Shepherd Park and Esty at Mount Pleasant, and then using the 3D printer at the actual foundation location. So it's been great. I mean, that's part of what I love about this residency is that I get to hop around libraries. I love libraries. It's like such a magical place.
Is that weird for you that this, I mean, this is stuff happening in libraries. This is as opposed to like studio spaces, right, or something that you might be more familiar with.
Yeah, it's not weird. It's actually really, it's different, but in a good way, because a lot of times studio time can be isolating. I mean, I love that about it too, just to have that alone time to focus on making work. And you know, but usually I don't interact with people outside of my own studio mates, unless I, you know, go to other studios. But so given the opportunity to hop around the libraries, it's a different way to work, which I really like. And then I love the, like, I'm able to bounce off ideas, like, with you and Casey. You guys really kind of, once I described to you what I was doing, like, you guys came up with all these ideas of how I could document the work and kind of more of the, like, techie side of filmmaking that I'm not that, you know, informed on. And then having Mel, who is like an expert at all the like equipment, you know, I've learned a lot from her with the 3D printer, and even, you know, it's been helpful because it's like I give her an idea of what I want, and then she's like, "Oh, let's do this. I know, you know, this program that will have it come out this way." And yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's like I feel like I have a team.
That's cool.
Well, and then. It's cool that you get to bounce off the public too, right? Because you're doing these programs.
Right.
We've only done a couple of them so far. We've got some more on the books.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that. I actually haven't been able to attend any.
Yeah, we'll have to get you in on one for sure. I would love to do something cross-collaboratively.
Sure.
But yeah, so we've done two programs so far, and we've got three more on the books in April. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting, I think, because the idea of like bringing art into the library. I mean, art... I think the library has always been a space for sort of like creative potential, right? We have knitting classes and even hand sewing classes and some of these basic things, but it's hard in a space that isn't necessarily like a studio to do something that's like really messy or weird. You know, it wouldn't be easy to do something like pottery in a library necessarily. But we have these great little spaces, these meeting rooms and whatnot around town in all of these different branches where we can do things like we were doing printmaking, and this month we're going to be doing relief printmaking. So it's not, you know, the most creative space in the world. It's not like it's the actual Fab Lab, but to be able to use those spaces and bring the public in and invite them to try things in a way that is very like low pressure, right? Because not a lot of adults are engaging in that creative energy. So these programs that we're offering and that Sade is teaching are like amazing because it's this free resource for people.
Right. Sade, did you come to this with teaching experience previously?
Yes, but mostly kids, not so much adults. But yeah, I've taught in DC and in PG County schools. I actually did a mural residency in Montgomery County. It was short because the turnover was pretty fast. But yeah, I usually work with elementary age kids, age school kids. Yeah. So it felt really natural. And then, I mean, I don't know, adults are kids too. Just taller.
Especially
bigger.
When it comes to creative stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
When it comes
especially
to art,
about
yeah.
creativity, because we're all still learning how to tap in. If we're not sort of quote unquote creative people, which I hear all the time, especially in the Fab Lab, "Oh, I don't know how to do this. I'm not creative." We're all creative. You just kind of have to tap into it, which I think is what I love about these programs that we're able to do. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a kids friendly sort of centric program coming up on the 9th,
April 9th.
At Petworth at 4:30, and you can go onto the library's website and learn more about that, but it's sort of a kid-centric printmaking, natural printmaking class. So if you're interested in that and you have a kid 5 to 12,
sure.
bring them on over to Petworth and we can do some natural springtime printmaking.
Yeah.
That is cool. It's also really interesting, this conversation about what a creative space is, I don't know if you remember Mel. Mel and I used to work together in the library's digital commons space. There was a gentleman who used to always come in there with books that he would haul down from upstairs, these big, big books full of all kinds of pictures. And he'd sit there with just a sheet of paper and a pencil, nothing special, nothing messy, and just be drawing whatever was in those books. So I think you're right, you know, that the library can be a creative space, but that it's different. And I'm really interested in seeing the work that you end up doing during this residency. I think that's going to be really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to bring the public in more. And, you know, as we have access to more spaces and are getting moving on that stuff, you know, it's been hard because we haven't had an interim space for about a year. And we've been working really hard on finding spaces that Sade and I can sort of make and be creative. But, you know, like, we're in an office setting right now, and that's not always the most conducive to creativity either. So, you know, we're really excited to be moving towards an actual physical Fab Lab again, just because that's the place to invite creativity in a way that feels really organic, and people can just come in and be messy, and it's not just like taking up their one little corner of the library table with their art books. It's more expansive,
right?
And they have the permission to be expansive and to not be sort of like shushed, right?
Yeah, that's cool. And so you were talking about how Mel has been teaching you 3D printing, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about some of the things you've been learning and growing on while you've been here?
Sure. The latest thing that we did last week was I found a file on printing hexagons onto fabric. I don't know, that's super cool. it's 3D printing these little sculptural hexagons onto tulle, which I'm hoping to expand the type of fabric that I'll end up using. But the idea is that because what I propose for the Maker in Residency is that I would make wearable sculptures, light sculptures, that could stand alone on their, you know, as potentially like chandelier-esque, but also be wearable in performance. So I'm thinking about how can I make this functional on the body, but also, yeah, be this like beautiful sculpture.
And what's been really cool about thinking about 3D printing and fabric is that 3D printing is already so customizable, right?
Yeah.
You can change every little detail of it until it's perfect and then print it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ability to then take that a step further and put it on a piece of fabric that can also be changed based on if it's going to be worn by, you know, a tall person or a short person, mm-hmm. or, you know, what have you, can really customize it to anybody. And that's something I love so much about this idea of 3D printing, is this sort of like iterative process, right, where you just get to try things and it doesn't work and so you try it again.
Yeah.
And for instance, with the tulle, you know, tulle is not a particularly strong fabric, so we were talking about like, would netting work, would something that's a bit stronger, you have to have a fabric that has holes in it in order for the 3D print to really adhere to itself. So we were sort of talking about like, what, you know, could we laser cut holes into a stronger fabric and then print over that? What are our options? And that process of just getting to try something and it not working and doing it again. And it's really good. And I mean, it also is so reflective of what artists do all the time in the studio. So it really is just sort of expanding that kind of process.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, the failures end up being successes too. So,
yeah.
And then aside from that, I started off making, I found files of Ethiopian crosses. They're called mezcals, that museums, I think, have made. They must have like 3D scanned actual Ethiopian crosses and then put the files into this program. And so I printed a couple of those, like smaller versions, bigger, kind of messing around with the dimensions. And so those have been really cool and they're beautiful. And I'm planning on making molds out of them so that I can remake them in other materials, possibly like beeswax and kind of other, I don't know. Yeah.
We did not talk about beeswax, and that's so exciting. Beeswax is going to be really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, because part of, I mean, I love beeswax. I'm obsessed with it. But part of the, my inspiration for the this work that I'm making is beehives and the culture of bees and relating it to community. So I think that, yeah, using beeswax is, makes sense.
Well, and then we were also talking about you are interested in 3D scanning a piece, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I have a pelvic bone. It's not real, but it's life size. And I think next week is when you're scheduled to go over to Mount Pleasant to scan it.
That's going to be really exciting.
Yeah.
And then your mom's jewelry piece too, right? You're going to maybe try to scan
that. I'm going
to
try. So she has some other muscles, because there's a bunch of different ones depending on the region that you're from, and which I'm also kind of researching that as well to provide more context for the sculptures that I'll be making. So, yeah. So I'm going to get some of her crosses that she will not let me borrow to wear, but she'll let me borrow to scan. And I'm excited about the pelvic bone, because I've used that a lot in my performative work and installations. And I've made molds out of them that weren't totally successful, but they worked for the performance pieces, but they were, ephemeral and didn't last beyond the performance. And I'm excited to actually make more pelvic bone sculptures that I can use and that will last and possibly make out of some kind of material that I can break. And
once you have the 3D file, you can just, your world
is endless.
Open.
Yeah. It's endless. Yeah. And for listeners who haven't seen this before, the 3D scanners are a really cool thing. You just kind of put the object on this little disc thing, right? And then it's shot with, is it lasers? Come on, help me here, Mel.
It's not lasers. it's like there's a light beam that basically it bounces off, and the reflection is how it reads the shape. So you can do these really ornate, specific sort of detailed structures. We've had people come into the Fab Lab and do anything from, things that have broken in their homes. Like, I had somebody who broke his favorite coffee mug, and he really desperately wanted to replace the handle. So he was able to scan both pieces and 3D print a piece that would fit back into it, all the way up to, these very intricate sort of detailed things. So people do anything from the sort of very necessary, I broke this and I want to copy, all the way up to these just incredible, I'm going to scan something and manipulate it, right? Because once the 3D file is digital, then you can just play with it as much as you want, which is part of the thing that I love about 3D scanning is you can just play and try stuff out and, again, see if it works. We've had people use the 3D scanner quite a bit. You can actually even scan your own face. You can scan yourself, which is not something that we're offering right now at the moment to the public, but there is some handheld technology out there that we're kind of practicing with and working with. So I could stand here and you could be sitting across from me, Will, and I could walk in a circle around you and it would take a scan of your face. It would take a scan of your face and then we would be able to print, 3D print a little Will head.
That's so cool.
So there's lots and lots of functionality. But yeah, the pelvic bone I'm really excited about because we haven't really done a whole lot with bones. And I think there's something so kind of primal and really central to all of us in this way that is bones especially hold a lot of interest. So I'm really excited to see how that goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I am too. And I'm excited not just about the things that, you'll be making through this time, but you've talked about how there's a performance element to it as well. And I'm kind of curious how you landed there from just, making things to then incorporating these things that you've made into these performances. How did that happen?
I've said this before in other interviews, but so a friend of mine who previously was my professor, and then we've kind of transitioned into great friends, and she is also kind of in my circle of mentors. She is the one who introduced me to performance art. I knew about it, but she kind of nudged me in that direction based off of the ideas that I had of work that I wanted to create and feeling limited in objects. And so she just kind of pushed me towards why don't you use your body to convey this message? And that's, and then I did. I did my first performance at the Corcoran Gallery with Brianna Siobhan, and I fell in love from that moment, and I haven't looked back since.
Yeah. In the studio lab space, I was telling you this earlier. We were looking at some videos of some of your performances, and it's it's really cool. And what I'm really, really into is that you involve the audience, you kind of interact with them in some of the, in not all of the performances, but many. And I'm excited to see your future performances. I think it's a really cool, unique idea.
Thanks. And I forgot to say, it was JJ McCracken. Got to give her a shout out.
There you go.
I didn't say her name. I'm really looking forward to, and I mean, I'm in this process now, but as the year goes along, it's going to really pick up where all of my ideas will come together. But I'm looking forward to joining the two parts of myself that I love, which is like making and building things with my hands, and then working with the community to make these public performances. So, yeah.
I have a question for you that you and I have actually never talked about, which is, I think, speaking about those two sides of things, right? Performance art, you can document it, right? You can video, you can take photographs, and you have some incredible photographs of your work online that folks can go and look at. But it is this very sort of ephemeral thing, right? Like, you're kind of stuck in this place of, it's going to go away when the performance is over. And there's very, there's a power behind that, right? That is like audience and participation and engagement, and even just the viewing of it is powerful. But then it's documented, but it's, that experience is never going to be recreated in the same way.
Right.
Whereas when you're making a physical object or a painting or a piece or something, it's not going to go away in the same way. Right. And so how do you connect those things? Like, what, is this sort of the crossover? Is this the connection of like trying to tie in the work that you're making and wearing in these sculptures? Like, I've just always been curious about that, kind of the ephemera versus the more sort of solid making and production.
Right. Well, the idea, I guess, for the January exhibit that will be at Anacostia Art Center, right? Yes. Is that it will, they'll be this installation of all the light sculptures, but then there'll be the documentation of images of the performance. There will be a video that will hopefully be shot in different angles when the processional happens. But also, you know, I do a way of, in which the performance can live on a lot of the times is leaving that ephemera in the space too. So, I don't know. I've done pieces where, you know, the ground spices that I used in the performance will be left right where I dropped it. Or if I broke clay, it'll be left where I dropped it, you know, to kind of give the sense that something happened here. But yeah, also, I mean, with performance, no matter how hard you try, like, there's no way to recreate it unless you were there. It's kind of like you missed it. You know, and yeah, I don't know.
But I think speaking to that sort of transforming the space, right?
Right, like, right.
That's such a powerful thing, and that makes a lot of sense in thinking about the work that you've done and these projects.
Which is why I love performance for that aspect, is that you're using your body, and there's something really energetic. There's a different form of energy that takes up in the space. You know, a performance term that a lot of people use is like activating the space, and that's what it really does feel like. It's you and the audience doing it at the same time. And that, I don't know, there's something so addictive about that energy, like, and that people, which is why audience members, when they come into a performance, whether it's like off the street or they're actually, you know, nobody, then they show up, they really love being a part of it. For the most part, because it's this live action that you get to do together. And there's this communal aspect that happens in performance that I think we all are thriving or thirsting for, I guess. Not thriving, thirsting for. Yeah.
Yeah, the more you talk about that, the more I feel like, you know, you were the perfect fit for the library, because you just keep talking about community and how performance for you has this, you know, together sort of aspect. And, you know, there's definitely, I think for the majority of staff at DCPL, like, there's something that brought us to the library, mm-hmm. and that was wanting to build strong communities, yep. and to work with people and help people. So I don't know.
Which I totally feel when I'm, it does feel, I don't know. It reminds me of being a part of an artist studio, to be honest. Like,
especially at the Shepherd Park.
Yeah. There's something very family oriented in the way that you all work, which makes sense. I mean, I don't know. Libraries are like, I don't know. They're like a, what's the word? Like a national treasure, you know? Like,
we agree.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
I think it really goes back to the thing that I love so much about this lab creative space, you know, these projects, right? We get to be on the radio. You guys get to help folks out in the community actually, like, learn about archiving and learn about video projects that they might want to do. We have the Memory Lab, which is the more formal archiving space, right? We have all of these projects, and all of them help kind of, like, make the library this really radical, inclusive space, which it was already. The libraries, right. Not always, but recently, libraries have been very inclusive spaces. But I think the more that we can change the face of libraries to being a place where you go pick up your holds, to a space where community come together, whether mm-hmm. it's through an art program or through learning how to archive old family photographs, or you know, coming to a story time, or whatever your sort of people use, you know, right, whatever your family or you yourself use it for, that is making the space like a radical inclusive space even more so. And that's the reason that I love working for the library, and yeah. the creative energy and getting to interact with people and all of those things is this incredible bonus, but just the sense of community is what I really love about what we do. Mm-hmm. And the art is just such an awesome added bonus.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would totally, I'm going to bite you off of that. I've my performances and just shows in general and exhibits are, I would describe them as radically inclusive. So, yeah.
See, she was the right choice. Cool.
Yeah.
So, kind of, I feel like this is a natural moment to talk about the Fab Lab. And, you know, we have a lot of people that come into the Studio Lab, use the Studio Lab there to learn about video and graphic design, audio, who were involved at the Fab Lab at MLK and are excited about that future and want to know about what's going on with the Fab Lab. Is there anything you can share with these eager listeners?
Absolutely. What is going on with the Fab Lab? So we have some really exciting things coming down, sort of down to us. One of them is a container lab that's going to be over at First and Pierce in NoMa. And that space is going to be a space that's kind of like programming based. We're going to do activities and programs there to kind of pull the community in and do different maker, fun, crafty, like kind of energetic stuff there. We'll definitely have some space for whatever project Sade is working on at that point and all of those things. In terms of our interim Fab Lab space, it's been just a little over a year since MLK closed. And so that space has definitely been missed by the public. We're working on a space at the Reeves Center, which is at 14th and U Street Northwest.
That's such a great location.
It's a really great spot. It's very metro accessible. It's very people accessible. It's in a really, like, you know, sort of bustling area of town. And that space, you know, we're still working on all of the details of sort of figuring out when and what. I've already gotten some really eager, lovely Fab Lab patrons emailing me asking if they can reserve time for the laser cutter, which they can't do just yet. But we do have a lot of
first dibs.
Absolutely. You and me calling it. But, you know, we're just so excited. We have this really amazing community of makers and people who are just curious about the world and trying new things at MLK. So we're so excited to be able to bring it back in and really kind of help connect those folks with what they're using. And that's anywhere from sort of like innovators in, I mean, we had people running there sort of cutting pieces and doing things for their businesses, all the way to, you know, somebody came in because their windowsill lever broke and he needed to like model and make a new one. So we had all sorts of different folks in that space. We really want to make it more teen friendly and more sort of like open to everyone, because so many people are afraid of machinery. They're sort of a little uncertain about it. So that's something I'm really looking forward to doing when we open this new interim space, is just trying to have super accessible programming and sort of like open hours to folks who maybe didn't get down to the Fab Lab space at the library, will now maybe get to use this space, which is cool. So it'll be our interim space. We don't have any more details right now, but we are working on those. And folks who are interested can go online to the dclibrary.org. DC Library website, and yes. Get on the Fab Lab, and we have a newsletter that's accessible there, and kind of get on those updates, because we'd love to keep you informed about what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. I can tell that you are excited about the laser cutter.
Yes.
We've been waiting a really long time for laser cutter access.
Got all these ideas waiting to come out, and yeah.
Yeah, that'll be really fun. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, though, there's also some really great programs happening at the Petworth Library. I've seen a lot coming from there. I know some like sewing classes, but there's something else going on there, isn't there?
So our coworker, Molly, is just an incredible resource for sewing knowledge. We have a couple really great sewers on the team, but Molly has really been sort of taking up the mantle of the programming around sewing and just offering these, you know, all the way from sort of really basic mending up to a little bit more advanced. So just really using those resources. So those are at Petworth. Again, you can go online and find out a little bit more about those classes and when they're offered. I do know that they book up quickly. They seem to be very popular, which I guess speaks to how good of classes they are. We have sewing classes. We have some more kid-friendly classes as we get kind of ready to go into the summer months. There will be some sort of like STEAM programming with some maker folks. We've been really lucky this year to be able to train some other library staff in sort of technology. We're calling them tech trainers. So the idea is that they're kind of ambassadors for the whole concept of the labs, and they can kind of learn and then take stuff outward. I have a coworker at Georgetown who's doing cool stuff with like Girls Who Code and is really working on sort of engaging with the community in that way. So we have all sorts of really interesting programming going on before, you know, we get the interim space totally up and running.
And there's one other thing I almost missed. I'm looking down at the notes. Digital Fab Innovation.
Yeah, so we are working with ALA, the American Library Association, we're going to be doing a digital fab event on the Hill to talk about maker innovation and ways that people use the library in really like innovative, creative ways, oftentimes to kind of promote their businesses or sort of to be like exploring and learning new things. So I'm going to go, I think you're going to come with us, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
That's cool.
So we're going to just kind of go and talk to some folks on the Hill about how powerful makerspaces are and why they're useful in libraries. And, you know, libraries are really the last like totally public open space mm-hmm. that people can just come be in. And so having that technology accessible to folks in a library setting is just so valuable, and that's the kind of stuff that we're going to be talking about. And also, everybody loves to see 3D printers in action, so we're going to go take some 3D printers down with us and show some folks how that works.
So you'll be helping demonstrate as well the 3D printers at this point?
Sure. I'm just showing up. I'm not sure
what. I didn't mean to like put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I'll probably be talking about the residency and maybe print out some of the things I've been working on, or at least bring them to show people.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's next week.
Ooh. No, well, I was just gonna say before we wrap up, I did want to put a call out to anyone who's listening in reaching out to the DC Public Library or Mel. I don't know whose information is on the website, but once I am kind of coming towards the end of the completion of this residency and the processional that I was talking about with you guys, I will need community members to participate. So, and I'm especially looking for, because the piece is related to migration and that of the Black population in DC and all over the world for the most part. I am looking for those of you who identify as a part of the African diaspora, so Native Washingtonians, Ethiopian immigrants, which I have plenty of people to pull for from that, but I do want to open up to the community. And I would love also other immigrant populations in the city to participate, like Salvadorians and beyond. So, yeah.
Yeah, if you're listening and are interested in that, you can get in touch with me at fab.lab@dc.gov. Fab.lab.
There we go.
At dc.gov. So you can give me a shout and I'll pass the information along.
Yeah.
That's... I mean, it's all very exciting. I'm really excited to see what happens, and I mean that very sincerely. Casey and I have really enjoyed having you come to the studio, and we're looking forward to helping you document the great things that you make while you're the maker in residence.
Awesome, yes, and children too. Please bring your kids.
Wow. We want to bring everybody.
Yeah, definitely want it to be an intergenerational. Yeah. Show.
Anyway, I think we should probably go ahead and wrap it up. This was the DC Library on Full Service Radio. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.